Let's play some cards.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
From Harrah's Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and professional broadcaster Paul Harrah's.
You're good, kid, but as long as I'm around, you're second best. You might as well learn to live with it.
You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Now, from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, the man who won the 2010 World Series of Poker main event and has had a great start to the year 2012. Jonathan Duhamel will join us a little bit later. It wasn't enough to win $9 million a couple years ago. He racked up $1.2 million just last month in tournament winnings, and we're happy to have him back on the show in about a half hour or so. Also on today's show, we'll run down the schedule for the 2012 World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis, which has just been announced. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's, sitting in the World Series of Poker room at Harrah's St. Louis. Well, my partner Dennis Phillips is alive and well after trying out skiing out somewhere near his home in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I'm still able to walk, so it was a good weekend.
How did your battle versus gravity go?
Not real well, to be truthful. Gravity won several times, but, you know, I was up there with friends and enjoy it, and, you know, it's something else that it's fun to do.
Yeah.
So the next time you feel like, you know, risking your neck at something, let me know, and we'll try to put something together.
Well, I have tried it a couple of times and did not like it because gravity is not my friend either. But, you know, we had, unbelievably blizzard-like conditions here. We had almost 3/4 of an inch of snow here yesterday in St. Louis, which nearly shut the town down.
Well, when we left Brianhead, we were leaving it the night beforehand on Saturday night, they had over a foot, I think it was more like 16 inches of snow up there. So we had a little problem with the traveling, too. In fact, I managed to get my car stuck. So.
Oh, really? Did you have to get somebody to tow you out of there?
Now I'll tell you what. Now this is sort of like it was nice. It made me feel like I was back home. We had people volunteer to help. A guy came and hooked onto and pulled me out. Wouldn't take a dime for it. The neighbors down the road that were staying there came down and helped out too. It just made you feel good. Yeah, just good people helping out other people.
Good to hear. And also, while we're here at the top of the show just talking about general stuff, congratulations to you on a very nice piece about you in this month's Card Player magazine. And I just saw moments ago they posted a nice little quickie interview with you on the Poker News website.
Yep. I've been talking to people. Part of the stuff in Card Player was a little bit what had happened was while I was down in Oklahoma, a Card Player was covering the event there for the new series that was down there that Kenny Lambert was helping to kick off in Choctaw. And we sat there. I did commentary on the Final Table, and we sat and talked for hours and hours there. And then he took stuff from that, part of most of which didn't really air, and turned it into an article. So he got a few of the facts a little wrong, but all in all, he got most of it right.
That was Card Player was sponsoring the first event of the Native American Casinos Poker Tour. Have we heard about any other events in that tour yet?
We have not. I've talked to a couple of people. They've got several of them that they're trying to put together. They were hoping to have another 4 or 5 of them yet this year, if everything works out the way that they hope to. And I hope it does. The first one was very successful down there. We had hundreds of people in that main event. And Card Player is a class act. They did a very good job of covering it.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, we have the schedule now for the circuit event that will be here at Harrah's St. Louis in the middle of April. And I thought we'd run this down. And one of the things that I think is nice about it is it's not just ring events at noon every day. Some of the 5 o'clock events will be ring events as well. Plus, every night, there'll be a $150 no-limit tournament for people who can't get here during the day and maybe want to come after work. So here's the schedule. It's going to start on April 12th, which is a Thursday. The noon event, a ring event, will be a $355 buy-in no-limit event. And then at 5 o'clock, there'll be a $245. The next day, Friday the 13th, will be a $565 no-limit event. And then there'll be a $355 pot limit Omaha event. The last 2 years that they've done circuit events here at Harrah's St. Louis, the PLO events were not ring events. But this time it will be a 355 PLO event on the second day of the circuit. And I think that'll increase turnout, don't you? The fact that it's a ring event and counts for the national points?
I absolutely do. PLO is getting more and more popular. They had some big turnouts down there in Oklahoma for it. I expect to see a big turnout in St. Louis for it with that bracelet available. Absolutely.
Yep.
Or the ring event, I'm sorry. Absolutely.
There will be another PLO event, which I'll get to in a second. But on the third day, on Saturday the 14th, they're going to do a $355 No Limit Hold'em event with two flights, one at noon and one at 5. This has become the new trend. You were talking about running into this down at the circuit event in at Choctaw, and they're going to do it here not just for that event but also for the main event, which is a week later on April 21st. It'll be a 16:20 buy-in, and they'll do one flight at 11 a.m., and then another one at 7 p.m. So I guess in those 8 hours, they'll run, what, usually 10 levels? Is that how they did it down at Choctaw?
I don't know if they get a full 10 levels in, but I think they ran 9 levels down there at Choctaw is what it was. But they actually ended it at about 6 o'clock. That gave time for the dealers to go grab a quick bite to eat, take a break after you get everything bagged up, and then they started again. So it was a very long day for the dealers. But anyone who was busted out in those first 8 levels was able to rebuy that night then and play again at the 7 p.m. Start.
Right. That's the same thing they're going to do here. If you're in the main event, you play the 11 a.m. flight, you bust out, you'll be able to play in that 7 o'clock flight. So it's a re-entry, not a rebuy, but a re-entry event. And then, of course, you'd come back for day 2 on Sunday. So let me tell you some of the other events that are going to go on here. The seniors event will be a noon event, $245 buy-in on Sunday, April 15th. Also that day will be a 5 o'clock ring event, a turbo no limit event, $355 buy-in. I don't know what turbo means in live poker. I know in online poker it usually means that the blinds go up every 3 to 5 minutes. What does it mean in a live event, every 10 or 15, Dennis?
No, I suspect this is a 20-minute round is what it will be, which is still extremely aggressive because you can't hardly go one circuit around the table in 20 minutes. Therefore, every time the blinds come by you, they've probably been increased.
And they probably have cut out some levels?
It's very possible they've cut out a few levels to go with it. That's going to be over quickly. That's one of those you're either going to catch some cards or you're not.
Yep. The next day, Monday the 16th, will be another ring event at noon, a 355 buy-in. And then at 5 o'clock, the Omaha 8 or better event with a $245 buy-in. Tuesday the 17th, there'll be a 6 max event at noon, a ring event with a 355 buy-in. 5 o'clock that day, there'll be a non-ring PLO event with a 245 buy-in. We've been talking about Omaha being a big deal here in St. Louis for the last couple of years. You see it reflected right there. 3 of the first 6 days, you've got some sort of Omaha event going on. And then on the 7th day, Wednesday, April 18th, there'll be a noontime no-limit hold'em event for 565 buy-in, and then a horse event at 5 o'clock that day for 245. Thursday the 19th, there'll be a 355 no-limit hold'em event. And then at 5 o'clock that day, they're going to do a mega satellite for the main event. They want to get as many people into this thing as possible. They know that not everybody's going to be able to fork over $1,620 to get into the main. So they're going to do a mega on Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock. And, of course, they will take late registration for these things. And then on Friday, they're going to do a $75 super satellite into the main event with 20 main event seats guaranteed. That'll be at 5 o'clock, and at 7 o'clock, a 355 mega. So as you can see, they're trying to feed as much, as many players into the main as they possibly can. There will also be, on Friday the 20th, a ring event with a $1,000 buy-in, actually $1,090 buy-in for that no-limit event. Then Saturday the 21st, the main event with those two flights that I told you about, and in the middle they're going to do a main event mega, a 355 turbo mega at 5 o'clock with the second flight starting at 7 o'clock. That's going to be very, very fast, isn't it?
Oh, I have no idea how they're going to structure that to get that taken care of. That's just got to be a massive, you know, like 5-10 minute rounds or something like that.
Yep.
But they'll find a way to get her done. There's no doubt about that. About those satellites, a lot of people don't realize the value in those. because if you have like a $245 mega satellite, that means approximately one out of every eight people are going to get a seat. So if you look around there, all you have to do is beat seven other people on average, and you're going to win a seat in the main event.
Right.
These are some very good values. If you're in town on Thursday or Friday and you want to try and get into for the main event, I would encourage you to come out for those satellites. I play the satellites a lot of times. They're a great value to get into a tournament. You don't have to win them. You don't have to final table. All you have to be is make that final number, that top 20 or whatever it happens to be.
That's how I got into the main event here last April. I played one of these 245 megas, and I think 19 or 20 places got paid. And, you know, it's not a matter of do I have enough chips, am I the chip leader? All you got to do is squeeze into that top 19 or 20 at that point, and you do it. It changes your strategy towards the end. You're not five-bet shoving with queens when you're that close to doing it. You pointed out that in some situations you might lay down kings or aces if you're on the bubble and one more person has to go out and you got plenty of chips. Why risk anything? It's not like you have to be the chip leader.
Very, very valid point, and I'm glad you brought that up because my favorite story that I recited a dozen times concerns another Harris Properties, the Caesars in Atlantic City, in a mega satellite that I was not playing in, but I was watching. They were down to 18 people. 17 people got seats. So they're one away. One person out of these 18 is going to walk away from it. The other 17 get the very same prize no matter what. And believe it or not, at the same table was the chip leader and the guy that was second in chips, and they both got it all in pre-flop against each other.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely. I couldn't tell who was the bigger fool, the guy that had the pocket kings or the pocket aces, because who cares? All they had to do was fold, and they were guaranteed a seat, and if they played it, they were guaranteed to maybe get a seat.
Yep.
It was horrible.
You know, that's an important strategy, and we'll talk more about satellite strategy as we get closer to the circuit event here in April. I do want to mention that after the main event starts on Saturday, there will still be a ladies event the next day at 2 o'clock and a 5 o'clock ring event, a 355 no limit. So if you play the main and you bust out and you still want to get a ring, that'll be a chance for you to do it. And as I mentioned, every night there'll be 7 o'clock, $150 no limit events, no rings involved, but plenty of cash there. And then on Monday the 23rd, it'll be the final table of the championship. And as I mentioned before, all the ring events here qualify for the National Point Championship, which means if you get enough points, you could free roll into the $1 million event at Caesars in May, just about a week before the World Series of Poker starts. So if you want that information in printed form, you can find it on the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room Facebook page. If you like that on Facebook, you can access it that way. We'll also have a link to it up on the Final Table Show page on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. One other thing I want to mention about this casino before we move on to the news of the day, and that is that tonight at 7 o'clock, those of you listening to us live on KFNS this afternoon rather than our podcast later in the week, if you're in town this afternoon and looking for something to do with your significant other, they're going to have a Jack and Jill event here at 7 o'clock tonight. Man, woman, teams. This was very popular during the Gateway Poker Classic. Each of you puts $100 up. You get 10,000 in starting chips, and then one of you plays the first level, and the second one plays the second level, and then it goes back and forth. You alternate. As long as you have chips, you stay in this tournament, and the couple that makes it to the end is going to win this thing. I'm sure everybody at the final table will end up getting a little bit of something. But anyway, registration's open now if you want to come out to Harrah's St. Louis. The event will start at 7 o'clock tonight for their Jack and Jill tournament, and then next Tuesday, they're back to the Bounty tournaments, which got a big start here last week, Dennis. They put a cap of 50 on it with some alternates and ended up getting 61 people in there because you can get it as an alternate in the first hour after the tournament starts. And so they've started kind of a new tradition here. And I thought maybe before we even get to the news, I know you've played in a couple of Bounty tournaments, some where you've had a bounty on your head and others where you've been playing for other people's bounties. Can you talk a little bit about Bounty tournament strategy?
Absolutely can. There's two different kinds of bounty strategies, depending upon how it's structured. And this is becoming very, very popular. I played in several of them. The horrible ones are when they put a bounty on half a dozen different people because, you know, you just don't have people playing normal against you or whatever. But a true bounty tournament where there's a bounty on every single participant in there can be one of two ways. The way they have it there, they're $150 buy-in and a $25 bounty. You need to collect about six of the bounties then to get your money back.
Actually, it's only a $100 buy-in and a $25 bounty.
Okay.
So you knock out four people and you're free rolling in the tournament.
Yeah, but it's a nice way to pick up some cash. It's a nice way to do it, and it brings up some little changes in there. When somebody goes all in and you've got a hand, you don't want to have two or three people in there trying to knock this guy out. You want to isolate and take him out so that you can collect the bounty. So it really does, cause you to maybe overbet your hand a little bit or something to try and isolate so that you're the only one going heads up against a guy that is at risk. And that's a little bit of it. Now, then the other kind of bounty that you can have is what they call a high-stakes bounty. I played in one which down at the PCA in the Bahamas. It was a $2,000 buy-in with a $1,000 bounty.
Wow.
Monstrous, absolutely. And that totally changed it. It changed your strategy. You wanted to try and be one of the chip leaders at your table because then you wouldn't be vulnerable against an all-in. So many people would lay down a hand if you had more chips than they did that they might not otherwise. So I got very aggressive early. I tried to get chips. I tried to be one of the top two or three at my table at all times. And then when somebody's pushing it out there, you know, you can really put them to the test. Because of that bounty, they know if they have less chips than you, there's very good chance you're going to call a major raise or you're going to shove against them to try to put them at risk. That $1,000 makes a huge difference.
So,
and I saw people calling all-ins with, you know, a 7-8 of diamonds, you know, that type of a hand. It was amazing.
So in a tournament like the ones they have here with the $100 buy-in and the $25 bounty, do you want to play small ball early on to accumulate chips, or is it important from the very first hand that you be thinking about getting your opponent's chips on into your stack and getting that bounty? Do you want to play big pots?
Well, again, it's how you feel comfortable in playing and everything that way. Myself, I try to accumulate chips. I try and go ahead and play small ball a little bit. But what you end up doing then later in a tournament, especially if you've got a decent stack, is you really pick on the short stacks. I mean, you become the bully at the table if you can. That's what you want. You want to try and get them to commit their chips against you and pick up those bounties. I mean, that's all about it. There's nothing it's great when you get down to a final table and you look and you've got 6, 7, 8 bounties in front of you that you know you're free-rolling. It's awesome.
All right, so the bounty tournaments will resume next Tuesday. Tonight's the Jack and Jill event at 7 o'clock. Bounties are back next Tuesday at 7 here at Harrah's St. Louis in the World Series of Poker Room. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. He's Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris here in St. Louis. Let's talk about some things going on in the news. One of them is a petition that a couple of players have started on the 2+2 forums about Full Tilt Poker. And the people who were Full Tilt pros and members of the board of director and shareholders, the petition essentially says that the World Series of Poker should ban all of these people who have Full Tilt money that was paid to them or that they had as shareholders or as debtors to Full Tilt Poker, that the WSOP should ban them from playing, and if they don't, it encourages the people who signed the petition to not play at the WSOP, to instead go over and play in the Venetian Deep Stacks or something like that. What do you think of this idea?
I think it's a non-starter, to be honest about it. Number one, the WSOP has, they were not involved at all in Full Tilt. They had nothing to do with it. Why would you want to penalize them for that?
Right.
And how successful are you in penalizing them by you yourself eliminating your chance to play and having to play in some places and not playing in it? Secondly, I mean, I've got several issues with this thing. Another one, part of these are shareholders they're talking about, people that made no decisions, that they had invested in the company originally, just like you buying shares of Enron or something like that. Now, does that mean that if you own shares of Enron and had received dividends from it prior to all of the problems that it developed, are you supposed to give that money back? Are you supposed to go to jail or something for it? The people like Howard Lederer and Chris Ferguson are not going to be playing in the WSOP. right? We already know that.
Yep.
There are several other people are not. But a lot of the red pros that had absolutely nothing to do with the decision-making here should not be penalized for it. I also have heard that there have been some discouraging remarks about Barry on there because he does, and there, you know, all these deadbeat quotes like Barry. No, give me a break. What Barry came out and said was that he owes the money, he's willing to pay the money, he just wants to make sure it ends up in the right hands. That's pretty much what he said. So now they're throwing things out, and they're asking him to be included in this and not be allowed to play in the WSOP. I think they've just gone overboard. I want to do anything in the world I can to try and get these guys to have their money back. But the only thing they possibly could be doing here would be throwing up another roadblock for the Tappy Group to have to look at as reasons why they may not buy the full-tailed assets.
Yeah, plus...
And that would be horrible.
I'm not sure that Caesars and the World Series of Poker can ban somebody from any of their events just because somebody was a shareholder in something else. They can't keep men out of the ladies' event. How are they going to keep a full tilt pro out of playing any of the ring or bracelet events?
Good, very, very good point. Yeah, even if they wanted to, even if they totally agreed with this petition, I don't think they could do it.
Yeah.
So I think it's a non-starter. Something to bring this forward, something to keep it in the news, something to, you know, encourage people to try and you know, do the right thing. You know, maybe. But this is a non-starter. It's just not going to happen, guys.
Yeah. And by the way, telling people to go over to the Venetian, if you're really an online poker pro, you'd have to keep in mind that Sheldon Adelson, the guy who owns the Venetian, came out against online poker. He doesn't like online poker. You know, I'm not telling people don't go to the Venetian. I'm just pointing out if you want to consider every aspect of everything related to this story, you got to include it all. I don't think you can drag the Venetian into this. I don't think you can drag WSOP into this. This is an issue that has to be solved through Full Tilt and the GBT and leave everybody else out of it right now. Get the money back to the players, but leave everybody else out.
I totally agree with you, and if you're in Vegas in June, you have the WSOP, of course, you have the Venetian, of course, you now have the Tropicana that's going to have a series of it, you've got the Golden Nugget that's got a series going on, you've got the Caesars that's got a series going on. I don't know, it just goes on and on. I guarantee that no matter where you go, if you're in Vegas in June, you can find a poker game.
Absolutely, and if you don't want to play at the World Series, fine. There'll be plenty of people taking your seat. while we're speaking about things in Nevada, we talked last fall about the Epic Poker League, and we talked about them at length through many of their events, and we've had Jeffrey Pollack and Annie Duke on the show talking about it. We also talked about some of the controversies, and in fact, Matt Glantz was on the show with us a few weeks ago, and we touched on this a little bit, and it had to do with a guy named Michael DeVita. You may remember back in September, he played in the $1,500 buy-in Epic Poker League Pro-Am at the Palms in Las Vegas, and that was kind of like a mega satellite where if you got to the top nine, if you made the final table, then you got to buy in into the $20,000 main event that they were having. It was a satellite, essentially, a $1,500 satellite in, and he was one of the final nine. Between the time that that tournament ended and the time the 20K event started, somebody found out that Michael DeVita has a conviction for a sexual offense. And so the Epic Standards and Ethics Committee went to him and told him, we're not going to allow you to play. We don't think that somebody with this on their record should be allowed to play in our main event. And he said, well, I don't think you can ban me for that, but if you do, fine, give me the $20,000 that I won for this seat. And they said, no, you didn't win $20,000. You won a seat. We're not going to give you that money back. Here's what we'll do. We'll give you your $1,500 buy-in back, but that's it. DeVita threatened a lawsuit, which he didn't follow through on, but he did go to the Nevada Gaming Control Board. And they, just this week, have told the Palms Casino that they have to give him the $20,000 minus the $1,500 he already got. So the Palms wrote a check to him for $18,500. Now, if you're asking why is the Palms paying it instead of Epic, it's because the Nevada Gaming Control Board licenses casinos. They don't license the Epic Poker League, so they have no control over that. They have no authority over them or the parent company, Federated Sports and Gaming. But they told the Maloof brothers, you got to write them a check from the Palms, and they did that. Here's the question going forward. Can this guy play in other events elsewhere? I mean, we just talked about the WSOP not being able to ban the full tilt pros. This whole thing seemed a little odd to us, and I think both you and I agreed that they really should have let him play here because it's none of their business what happens outside of their own event, right?
That's pretty much where it was, and I don't think either one of us quite agreed with the $1,500 give back either. It just didn't seem right. So I'm not surprised by the Nevada Gaming Control Board's ruling here, and I'm not surprised that it was the Palms that had to pay it back. I'm just wondering what's going to happen between the Palms and the Epic Poker League now. Who's going to end up being, footing the bill at the final time? But the Vita, this is what I also understand, is that he's been in contact with Pinnacle Entertainment, the ones who are reported to have bought the Epic Poker League. And he has been told by them that he will be allowed to play in the future if it's up to them. So this thing is just getting muddier as far as I can see. But I do think that the Epic Board may have over... I like the idea of trying to police it. I like the idea of trying to make it more out front and get rid of all of these, former reputations that poker playing had.
Yes.
But I think they may have overstepped a little bit here. And this was a conviction that was 20 years old, that he had paid any and all debts to society for it, and it appears led a clean life for the last 20 years. Therefore, for them to step in and say, well, we're not going to let you play it, I don't know. I'm not too sure if he took him to court that he wouldn't win and would be able to play in these.
Yep, I agree. All right, one other story before we get to our guest here on the show today, and this is a weird one. Brad Booth is a fairly well-known poker pro, hasn't really been on the scene much for the last couple of years, but he's a guy from Alaska who appeared on some televised poker shows and kind of had a good reputation, played a lot online, had a good reputation there. Something happened, though, a few nights ago where he posted some comments on the 2+2 forums and also posted a video of himself recorded at 2:00 in the morning. And by the way, I think the overriding lesson from all of this is don't record anything at 2:00 in the morning and then post it online until you've gotten a good night's sleep. But he posted a video of himself reading what he had written on this forum. And here's what he said. I've spoken with Russ Hamilton in the last 2 days. Now, for those of you who don't remember, Russ Hamilton was one of the bad guys in the Ultimate Bet scandal, the super user scandal, where they could see their opponent's cards and people got ripped off for a tremendous amount of money. So Brad wrote, I've spoken to Russ Hamilton in the last 2 days. It's been mind-boggling texting back and forth to a guy who totally effed up my career. It feels like I'm talking to my murderer. Not too sure if you understand how that would feel, but I'm full of mixed emotions and quite the adrenaline rush. It's a very delicate matter for me and others affected by this scandal. I need to make sure I don't bite more than I can chew, and I'm not looking for attention or sympathy, which raises the question, why would you post this online, Brad? He says, I've dedicated my life to poker. I didn't expect to hear from Russ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They couldn't offer me $5 million tomorrow to keep my mouth shut about this. I would never sell out to myself or the poker community. But then he goes off on a rant about Phil Hellmuth, where he started tweeting some things about how Phil needs to contact him. He said he had a 45-minute conversation with Phil Hellmuth the other night, and he owes and has some explaining to do with the poker community, and that there needs to be some clarity in all this. Now, whatever it is that Brad Booth has or thinks he hasn't come forward with that yet. As of right now, there's just kind of this one bizarre post and this very, very odd 2:00 in the morning video. And frankly, Dennis, I don't know what to make of any of this. Do you?
I'm a bit lost. I've met Brad Booth. I played poker against Brad Booth a little bit. He's not really a friend or anything, but I'll tell you, he's a nice guy at the table. Everybody seems to like him. He has a good reputation. I do think that financially, he's in trouble. He lost a lot of money that he couldn't recoup online, and maybe it's just some frustration that's come out, and he just finally got the best of him, and he had to rant a little bit. I don't know, but what the heck is?
I think it goes back to the frustration over losing money, and it may be tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars that he lost online or had stolen from him. I think we can use that word for what happened to some players during the Ultimate Bet scandal of several years ago. But where he's going with this, I don't know. And I think the poker community would say, Brad, if you have something, tell us what you have. Don't just kind of make vague threats and talk about money owed to you and money that you owe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just seems so odd to me.
I do. I just don't understand.
And who knows how to get to the bottom of it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by 2010 World Series of Poker main event champion Jonathan Duhamel as the Final Table Poker Show continues here from Harrah's St. Louis on Five Night of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harris. My partner Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. A reminder that you can find out about the circuit event coming here in April and all of the things going on between now and then by going to harrahsstlewis.com, or you can download the Bravo Poker Live app and find out about the games that are going on here live every day, how many tables they have, and which games are being played, and also details about all the tournaments going on here every day. Again, that app is free. You can download it. It's Bravo Poker Live. And while you're downloading stuff, you can download our shows via iTunes or Stitcher Radio, or you can listen to them live here every Tuesday afternoon on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. All right, Dennis, you get to intro today's guest.
Well, our guest today is Jonathan Duhamel. He won almost $9 million as a 2010 WSOP main event champion. Now, last year, during his reign as a main event champion, he started out with the NBC Heads Up, where he was a semifinalist there, made deep runs in the EPT and the WPT events, had a couple more cashes at the WSOP. But last month is when he really brought his name forward again. Down at the PCA, he entered five tournaments down there and combined earned about $1.2 million because they made four final tables out of those five tournaments. A second place in the 25K high roller, and he won the first place in the 5K event. Jonathan, welcome back to the final table.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So you had a good month in January. What? How are you going to top it?
Boy, I don't know. That was a pretty good week for me there. I mean, I was just so pumped up going into the start of 2012, you know, playing the PC out there. It just felt so amazing to me just to go there. So I was really pumped up, and I just wanted to do well, you know, no matter what's going to happen, just try to play well. And I guess I ran good a little bit because it was just an incredible, amazing week for me. And I'm just so happy with the results I had there.
Yeah, well, we were really happy for you. We were hoping you'd get a case of the run goods because of the run bad you'd had in the previous month. And I don't want to go into a lot of the details here from the home invasion, and I know there's still a lot of stuff pending that you can't talk about. But the most important question is, have you fully recovered from your injuries, and have you gotten any of your stuff back?
Well, recover, yes and no, I guess. Physically, I had, like, some bruises here and there, but mentally, it was probably the toughest part for me to approach the PCA. I mean, when it first happened, it took me a couple of days that, you know, I didn't really want to go at all. I thought about, you know, canceling my travels and everything. But, you know, after I saw my family, all my good friends, they kind of reminded me of, you know, what I was made of and stuff. And for me, it was just after that big motivation for me to go out there. And I kind of put a lot of pressure on myself, you know, because I want to prove myself I could compete with those guys and play at that level at any given time. So, I don't know, it just gave me extra pressure, extra motivation for me to go out there. And I was so pumped up. Just every single tournament I played, I was playing in it like I could win it, really. And I played very well. Got very lucky at the same time. So I was just an explosive magic combination.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think anybody wants to upset you anymore if that's the end result, the way you played down there in the PCA, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick question for you. Do you have any words of wisdom or advice for anybody else maybe that has bracelets or some, any lessons maybe you can give to some of the younger players now if they do win a tournament, where to put their money or anything like that?
Well, I would just say be careful, I guess. As soon as your name goes out, as soon as people know that, you know, you've won some money, if you won a bracelet and stuff, you know, there's always, you know, it's not anyone who's honest on this world, unfortunately. So it's just about, I think, being careful, you know, do not keep too many cash with you at all time. And, you know, having a bracelet is nice. Mine was in the safe, but, you know, even though it was in the safe, they made me open my safe. So we're never too careful. That's the worst part about it. You always got to watch your back and you know, look about where you're going and who you're hanging with and stuff. So I think it's just about, use your head and look around you at all times and just, you know, try not to flash your money too much and try to be cool and stuff, because that's just not going to work. First, you're going to get, you know, your friends not going to be a real friend that you're going to have just because they're going to be with you just because of your money. And then it gets dangerous if people know that you keep a certain amount of cash with you. It can be dangerous for your life. So just be careful and use your head, I think.
Yeah. You know, we didn't talk to you much during the 2011 because you were so busy traveling around and playing all these live tournaments all over the world. But I guess you and Dennis do have one thing in common, having both made it into the November 9 there and making millions of dollars. And that is, you know, there's the upside to winning, the travel, the buy-ins, the fame, the fortune, all the rest of it. But one of the downsides, which I guess you're alluding to there, is not just that you can have your stuff stolen from you, but even the people who you thought were your friends, everybody wants money from a champion, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, you know, the friends you have before, because for me, I was kind of lucky. I have my group of friends that I have since I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old. So I know those guys, you know, they respect me and they like me for what I have, really. But then when you get some new people that you meet, you know, after being a champion, after having made the November 9 or something, then it's kind of tough to see if those guys are really, they want to talk to you and stuff just because really they respect you or just because of your name and your reputation. So I think it's important to keep your head up and just be aware of that so you can just realize that some people might not be with you for what you are, really. So there's some ups and downs for sure. It's just about, I think, again, it just use your head well and just realize that, I think.
I think that's some words of wisdom, and I can agree with that. Unfortunately, probably all of us get burned a little bit, hopefully not a lot. But you find out you have a lot of relatives and a lot of friends.
So let's talk about the good news about the PCA.
Yeah.
And one thing that Dennis and I talked about, and we actually both laughed out loud about, was the $100,000 super high roller, which only, you know, a couple dozen people entered. But you not only played in that, bought in for the 100K, but busted out first and then rebought. You rebought into a 100K super high roller. Now, it worked out for you. Because you ended up fourth, and you ended up taking down $313,000. So you made back more than you put into it. But I'm curious about the moment where you bust out of the tournament and you're sitting there. How do you make that decision to go, okay, I'm going to put another 100K on the line?
Well, at first, it's not an easy decision, that's for sure. For me, I just, I was on after, like, only 2 hours of play. And then you started, the stacks are so deep. So, I think I played very well in those 2 hours. I lost a very big race at the end. But, I thought I was playing well and stuff. And even though the field was very tough, you know, I kind of liked my chances at that point. So, you know, when I got busted, I just took 2 minutes, sit on the chair and thought about it. And just said, all right, let's go. I think I'm playing well. I got an edge. So, a lot of money, but just let's do it. I didn't want to go home. I mean, it was too early for me, and I really felt like I could do well. So it was, I would not say it was an easy decision, but just thinking about it for 5 minutes was more than enough for me to just, you know, be back in it and put some gamble and hopefully be able to just cash in the tournament.
How much did the non-professionals, the businessmen that are participating in there have to do with your decision? I mean, you have to feel that you can outplay those guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because the rest of the field is so tough. It's the top players in the world. So, you know, those businessmen, even though they play much, much better than what they used to, you still have a pretty good edge against them. So it's kind of important. You want to have, like, be lucky in your seed draw and have position on those guys. There wasn't a lot of them in the field, but there was some. So it kind of helped my decision and kind of made me rebuy in a way.
Yeah, the only other guy who rebought was businessman and entrepreneur Bill Perkins, who's got a lot of money. And maybe his being at your table, because you ended up knocking him out, maybe his being at your table influenced the rebuy decision?
Actually, no, because when I first rebought, he was not on my table.
Oh.
He got changed afterwards. So when I rebought, I got put back on the exact same seat I had on my first table, which was like probably the toughest table on the field. So I was kind of unlucky with that. But then again, there was some players' movement, and I was lucky enough to have him on my right after that. So I was able to just play a lot of hands, a lot of pots against him with position. So eventually that paid off pretty well.
Awesome. Now, you've played for, it's been over a year since your main event final, since you won the championship there. Have you noticed how people play against you? Do they play different now? And how has your game changed or progressed in the last 14 months or so?
Well, yeah, my game has changed a little bit because, we have to say people play differently, against you. Some of them is because they've seen you on TV, so they might think they have, some hints on your game and stuff. And some others, it's just, the fact that you're the world champ, everyone want to bluff you all the time just because you're kind of famous a little bit. So people want to have a story when they go back home. So, a lot of the amateurs, they're going to try to put up the big bluff or kind of make the big call at the end. So I kind of had to adjust my game a little bit, playing a little more carefully than what I used to, a little less aggressive, because people have seen me playing aggressive on TV, so I kind of have to adjust that a little bit. But then again, it's not everyone who changes their game, so some of them won't change at all, and you got to be able to, to see who's changing and who's not changing your game, so you keep playing, the most profitable way against those guys. So it's kind of a tough thing to do a little bit, but again, it's just just more challenge. It just adds challenge to the game, so it makes it, for me, way more interesting to play the game.
Jonathan, we told our Twitter followers to send us questions for you, and one of them, Miguel Piet, said, Jonathan, are you more of a deep stack, long level tournament player, or do you prefer a faster event?
Well, I gotta say, I like both. There's two ways to see it. I love deep stacks, slow structure, just because as a good player, I think when you think you have an edge on the table, your edge gets bigger and bigger, and so you can abuse the other players, much more and stuff. So I think your EV is going to be way bigger that way. On the other hand, though, we play so many tournaments all the time that, once in a while, having a turbo and it just... it's just a lot of fun. I think it's more of a luck thing, and there's less skills involved when it's a turbo. But it's a lot of fun to play it. And I realize that often the big buy-ins, the 25K or the 100K, they're not turbos, but they're not real big deep stacks, just because the field is so tough anyway. And we don't want to play for a bunch of days, straight days against those tough players. We just want to kind of gamble a little bit. So I think mixing both is probably the best way. So you can have like the two. So you can just play the turbos when you need to gamble, and just after that go play the real big deep stacks when you really want to do well and kind of play more of a chess match than a gamble thing.
Well, nobody's ever accused you of not being willing to throw your chips into the middle there. When you were down at the PCA in that 25K high roller, final table, Jason Kuhn, five bets you on this table, and you call, you had pocket kings, he's gone, he's out in fourth. Then Isaac Haxson, four bet shoves you. And again, you call, boom, Isaac's on and out on third. Should these people start calling Joseph Chong or something like that ahead of time?
Well, I mean, I guess I played with those guys a lot, on those high rollers, and they know I play aggressive and stuff, because I know those guys, they're not going to change the way they play against me, because they're not a matcher. They're pro, top pro players, so they're going to play the best against me. So I play aggressive all the time, and, I just, one of those spots when sometimes they're going to have complete air and the other team's going to have the nuts and two kings or whatever it is. So it's always like that, I think, against those players. A lot of aggression, a lot of big moves and stuff. So it's kind of important to try to have the good timing of, the goods when you need it. And when you're making a bluff, you need the other one to kind of not having the hand. So it happens like that. And that PCL was kind of lucky that it all went my way.
Do you think that these guys and other players are more or less likely now to try moves like that? I mean, because everybody has seen when Joseph pulled the six-bet shove against you with queens and you nearly snap-called him at the main event, which was, the biggest hand of your final table there. And now, what Dennis is talking about, Jason, when he five-bet, you had ace-four and you had kings. And when Isaac made the move against you, he had king-queen of diamonds and you had ace-jack, and you made the call in both cases. The ace-four is kind of a light move to be making. The king-queen, maybe. But are you finding that people are doing that more or less against you as more and more of these hands get known?
Well, it's tough to say. I think the amateur for sure does it like way more often, but the top pros are really good players, like those two guys. It's just you know, we've played a lot again, and I play really aggressive. So for them, it's kind of you have to make those moves at one time, because you know my playing style is really aggressive. So if you keep folding all the time, you know, I'm going to be abusing you and abusing your stack. So you need to try to make moves and stuff. And, you know, sometimes I'm going to fold because I probably won't have a hand. Because, you know, sometimes I do 3-bet and 4-bet with almost nothing. But sometimes I'm going to have a hand too. So, you know, probably, like, they have to take that risk. And it just, you know, for them, they wasn't lucky at that time. I don't think they do it, like, more often or less often than usual. It kind of happened, you know, this way that time. But, yeah, just, I don't know, you got to make those moves sometimes, and at that time I had a hand, so, yeah.
Well, you've had a year, a little over a year now, of traveling around the world. You've got some more tournaments coming up. Is there any place you've been to that you really want to go back to? Any place, maybe the Aussie Millions or Monte Carlo, you haven't been to yet, you're looking forward to? Well, what's the next few months going to bring?
Well, to be honest, I've never been to Australia, and I really want to go back this year. But I want even more. I really want to go to Deauville even more. So that's why I decided this year to go to Deauville. But the one I can't fight is the EPT Grand Final, which is going to be in Monte Carlo, like it was like 2-3 years ago. This is just an amazing city, so beautiful with all those big yachts everywhere. And I know the game is going to be big, you know, it's going to be a big main event, a lot of players, big buy-ins and stuff. So for me, I can't wait to be out there. There's a lot of nice tournaments in this time frame, right before there's a big EPT in Berlin. So it's just going to be a big travel in Europe for me. So this one, I can't wait. For now, I'm going on the West Coast in a couple of days to play in LAPC and Bay 101. So I couldn't go with Bay 101 last year, so it's going to be a very fun event, I think. Lots of fun to go out there. I look at my schedule right now, it's just so full everywhere. I got so many tournaments everywhere, and it's just the way I like it. I like traveling, I like playing. I'm a poker player, so this is what I like to do for me.
Not a bad life for a 24-year-old guy, right?
Yeah, not bad. I'm pretty lucky.
Do you ever get to play cash games? So if you bust out of a tournament, do you go sit down and cash, or are you now just exclusively a tournament player?
Well, it's pretty funny, because before winning the main event, I was like 100% a cash game player. I was not even playing like in the Sunday Million and stuff. I was only playing cash, and then now it's the complete opposite. I almost only play tournaments. I'm going to play some cash games here and there, but a lot less than what I used to. You know, I almost when I play online, I play almost only tournaments now. So I might play some live cash games here and there, but you know, not that much. I kind of feel like I need to play big, otherwise I'm gonna get kind of bored a little bit. Also, the fact that when you play so many tournaments, you know, it's kind of draining a little bit. So when you have like a night off or something, just go out and you know, have a beer and talk with some friends and stuff, and just. You know, it's good for the, you know, for your balance and stuff, because if you have too much of poker in your life, then, you know, it's never good to have too much of it. So you need a good balance. It's pretty important, I think.
That's right.
Well, I think when you head over to Europe and you go to Monte Carlo, you'll be amazed. I've been over there twice, and it's just a phenomenal city. So make sure you either go a day early or stay a day late and take in some of the sights and just relax, because it's well worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was there actually 3 years ago, and it was just amazing. It's probably one of the best places I've ever been. So it's going to be a real, real nice tournament. And I'm so happy the EPT Grand Final have decided to go there. Again, just PokerStars is showing they're such a great organization and such a great tournament organization to organize all those tournaments everywhere on the planet. So I'm just, again, so pumped up for it. And hopefully it's going to be as good as what it was during PCA.
Jonathan, let me go back to the PCA for just a moment here. Last month, you were at the final table of that 5K event that you ended up winning with Pius Hines, who, of course, is the 2011 main event world champion. You were there watching him against Martin Staszko, and you actually presented him, I believe, with his bracelet, you know, last year's champion, giving it to this year's champion. But then you actually got to play with Pius at the PCA. Give us a little evaluation of his play from what you saw from the stands and from being at the same table with him.
Well, the guy is an amazing guy. He's just an all-around very good guy. He's going to be a very good champ that I know for sure. You know, when I watched him playing against Martin during the Heads Up at the World Series, I thought he was playing great, you know, aggressive. And, you know, just like a true young online grinders, those kids are so aggressive, so good. And he kind of, he looked like a very strong player. And then when I played with him during that final table, it's the exact same thing that happened. You know, very strong, very aggressive. He takes a lot of risk, but again, you don't want to mess with him in some big pots because you never know what he can show. You know, you never know what his two cards going to be. So it's really tough to play against those style of guys. He's playing very well. I think he's going to have a lot of success, you know, in the upcoming years if he continue playing and stuff. And he's just an all around, you know, very great guy. So I kind of had the chance to, you know, have a drink with him. I think it was in Prague. We talk a lot, and he's like a real, really good guy. So I'm happy for him, and happy for Martin too, who finished second. Also a very good guy. So I think we were lucky this year with the finalists we had, and it's two great guys who finished first and second.
All right. Last week we had Jack Effel on the show, and we went through a rundown of the WSOP this year and some changes in it. Have you had a chance to look it over? Do you see any events that look interesting this year you're going to play for sure?
I've looked pretty quickly. It's not complicated for me. I'm just going to play in all of them. I'll see that for like the entire 6 weeks, and I will be playing like all of them all the time. So it's just I'll be playing in the 1K tournament, and I will be playing in the million one, in the big one tournament of One Drop also.
Oh, yeah?
So, oh, yeah, for sure I will be playing. I've announced for sure during the, you know, the PSI's Heads Up that I would be playing in it. You know, I've arranged my things and stuff, so I'm just so pumped about this one. Give a lot of money to a One Drop Foundation, to charity, and then just go play a 1 million buy-in tournament. It's going to be so sick. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I just can't wait. It's going to be this one. It's going to be like the 50K Players Championship. I'm going to try my here in this one also, because I've played a bunch of mixed games this year trying to practice. So I'll be everywhere again, and hopefully I'll be able to catch up another bracelet.
What are the chances of a rebuy in the million?
0% of this one. It's a little too big.
All right, last question for you. A Twitter follower named Andrew Zauzirny says, Jonathan, what do you feel about the Habs' chances of making the playoffs this year? We got a Canadiens fan here,
boy,
and we got a Blues fan in Dennis. What do you two guys think about the NHL this year?
It's sad to say, but there are not a lot of chances for the Canadian. I mean, I'm a big, big fan, one of the biggest fans of the Montreal Canadiens, but they're playing so bad this year, so bad. So it's pretty sad to say, but let's just hope that next year is going to be better than this year.
Well, the Blues should make the playoffs. They've got the best home record now of anybody in the league. They're a little weak on the road. I'm a little worried about that. But it's a young team, it's an aggressive team, and they've got some great goaltending going on right now. So I think we'll make it through a couple of rounds at least.
The goaltender was in Montreal 2 years ago, so that's why you got one of the best in the league.
All right.
Hey, Jonathan, we know your schedule is very, very busy, and over the last couple of months we're not going to be able to talk to you, but I hope we get to run into you again this summer out at the Rio during the series, because it's always a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. It was my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
2010 World Series of Poker main event champion Jonathan Duhamel joining us here at the final table. What a great ambassador for our game, Dennis.
Oh, if you've never sat down with him, he's just a pure pleasure to do it. He's just straightforward, honest, and just a general good guy. A very, very good ambassador.
Yeah. All right, that's it for the final table this week. Next week, David Bach, the gunslinger, will be joining us. Until then, check out our website, thechipleader.com, where you can find all of our Final Table Poker radio shows. You can also listen to us via iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And every Tuesday at 3, live here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.